time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa, and I give a shit. Hey, I give a shit that you're listening. Thanks so much for listening. We have a great show here today. But before we get started, it's also my job to make sure that I remember to ask you for money. So if you're listening and you're enjoying this, it's not just us. It's like doing the right thing. You know, standing up for free media, free speech, and all that other stuff. So go to our homepage, radiofreebrooklyn.com/donate. You can wait to the end of the show. Maybe you're thinking giving a quarter now, but by the end of the show, I think you could be up to $5. So sit it out and then donate, okay? Thanks. Anyway, I'm really warmed up today. I just want you to know because my husband and I, you know, we've been together, it'll be 20 years in September. Oh, my God. Well, I'm old, so, you know, things add up after a while. But, every once in a while, like, we really can't stand each other, and then we go in for a tune-up. So this is one of those times, and the only time I could go was this morning. So I had to rush around and I've already been in couples therapy. But, you know, it's funny because no matter what, I notice that when I go into the therapy office, I'm like really pissed off at my husband. And then when I leave, I feel much better about him almost every time. So I think that was a well-spent hour and a great warm-up for my guest today, who I am so excited to have. It's the one and only Kevin McCaffrey.
Hey.
Hey, Kevin.
Thank you. That's an ovation from 100% of the people in this room.
They are. But, you know, everyone at home is secretly going like, yes, finally. So,
anyone who wanted to hear genuine talk about Syria and then me talk honestly in the same hour span, you can't get that anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, we follow up Democracy Now.
How, heck yeah.
You know, I mean, what kind of, that's the best warm-up act. You need relief. You need comic relief after this.
Yeah, it can't all be one thing. And this right. There are a few things that are more than one thing, more than the roster of this radio station.
They take you down, we take you up.
Yeah, up and down, totally.
So Kevin is a very, very highly esteemed, successful comedian, at least,
In
my book, for sure. I mean, okay, so you haven't starred in any movies, in any Hollywood movies.
I have not starred in any movies. I was in one movie.
I'm sure you were.
It was not a Hollywood movie. We shot in upstate New York. I played Keith, leader of the Drunks, is how I'm credited on IMDb.
Oh, very good.
It's a little indie movie.
Indie movie.
Yeah.
But Kevin is, you know, he's the real deal. I mean, here's a guy who's made a living his whole adult life in comedy. He has done, you know, stand up on David Letterman. He's been on all these TV shows. And he has a lot. Kevin, can you tell us quickly?
Sure.
This bio is literally four paragraphs long, so sum it up. Give us your career highlights and what you're working on now.
Bios are the worst.
And then put your website in there.
Oh, sure. It's kevin-mccaffrey.com is the website, so that has the aforementioned four paragraph bio, which will thoroughly cover it all. But basically I'm a stand-up comic. That's my main job. The best one of those things I did was on Letterman a few years ago. That was a big bucket list thing.
It's great
for me. Thanks so much. And it was great to get that in before he left, obviously. I toured doing stand up. I've been on a bunch of TV shows, a lot of those talking head shows, you know, on True TV and VH1.
And you write a lot.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And right now you have your own podcast and you're on TV. What are you doing right now so we can know?
Right now is the podcast is College Stories, which is exactly what it sounds like. I talk to comedians and just showbiz people in general about their craziest college stories or most influential college stories, mm-hmm. whatever.
And you went to Ball State, which is where Letterman went.
It is,
and
yes.
You two have acknowledged that on the air.
We did. Well, I don't think he mentioned it on the air, but after my set, I was told by the person who books the stand-up, she, as he was leaving the office in their sort of post-game conference, she just threw in, and he went to Ball State, and Dave turned was like, I knew I liked him, that's why, and then like left. So that is, I hear it was acknowledged privately.
It was acknowledged.
Yes.
So you guys,
we're basically
bonded.
Best friends. No. Yeah.
Okay, right. Yeah. Okay, And you have a comedy album coming out soon.
Yes. Coming out, yeah, and then we don't have the release date yet, but probably like March or April.
A month or two.
Yeah, it will be called Nice and Drunk.
Okay,
is what
why don't you, when that comes out, why don't you send us a track from it, and I will be happy to play it right here.
Thank you.
Dr. Lisa Gives a
Hell
Shit.
Yeah.
I think we should do that.
Yeah, let's all give a shit.
So look forward to that and listen every week till we do it, folks.
Yeah.
Make you... So anyway, I Kevin does this really great show once a month called
Serious Matters at Union Hall in Brooklyn. We're the first Thursday of every month except April. We got put to a weird date, but March 1st, if you're in Brooklyn, 8 p.m., come out in that. And yeah, Dr. Lisa was our guest. I think, was it the last show?
I think it was the last show, the beginning of February.
Yeah.
So I had the honor, that's kind of how we met.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had the honor of being on the show. So I have, we have friends in common. And hi, Shane, one of our hosts.
Yeah.
He's listening, you know.
He did,
our friend in common.
He posted about
it. He's really
about,
kind
yeah.
of, and so is Ramel, our friend in common.
Mm-hmm.
So we have friends in common, but I don't really know Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have a very good impression of him, and I think he seems pretty well adjusted, but I don't really know him.
Sure.
And I was, so here, I'll catch you up what we were talking about before, we got on the air. Why you were listening to the down stories about Siri and everything? So Kevin and I. So Kevin, here's what I know about Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin hasn't been in therapy, but everyone in his family has.
Pretty much, yeah. My immediate family all, at least at some point. And my youngest brother didn't go very consistently for a long time, but my mom and dad both have, and my other brother did for a little longer. So at least at various points, everyone has been except me.
Right. And so you're the oldest of three boys.
I am, yeah.
Your parents got divorced when you were eight,
mm-hmm.
and your mom's kind of gave you a lot of, she really like put a lot of faith in you.
Yes. Very, very encouraging, huge, huge amount of belief, bordering on, you know, delusional, which is nice, you know. But yeah, super supportive, affectionate lady.
Which also gave you a lot of responsibility.
Sure. Yeah. I think in some ways I probably have seemed like I probably seemed like a child cosplaying as a grown up pretty early on. But yeah, I was the man of the house when I was like eight. Yeah.
Right. And one thing that I observed about Kevin, which you agreed with Kevin,
mm-hmm.
is that, Kevin has, and I mean, I sense this, because, you know, I'm so smart and everything, but and I'm
yeah, totally.
Because I'm a mind. No, but I said to Kevin that I thought he was a really natural comedian, and he knew, like, from when he was a little kid that he was always going to be a comic, which you said yes to. So Kevin's life, this is my impression.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, like, since he's a little kid, I'm going to be a comedian. Not that he hasn't had obstacles, but he's had a pretty sweet career. He's made a living. He's worked on warm-up comic for Letterman and stuff like that. So Kevin has always kind of known what he wants to do and has followed a fairly linear path to becoming a comic, which I'm sure has had lots of ups and downs. So on the surface, Kevin seems, I'm going to say, bland.
Sure, yeah. I think, like, I think I don't quite as easily, at least just in, like, sort of a two-dimensional snapshot photo, I don't think I come off as, like, artist, right? Because I think the idea of an artist or performer in general, you think of, you know, much more of just like a wild card personality in general.
Well, I mean, when I see,
and by you, I mean
I wasn't thinking that. I mean, what I was thinking is, here's somebody who has had, as far as a direction in life,
mm-hmm.
hasn't had a lot of angst. That's what I kind of mean.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Because you've always been pretty directed, and there's a prescribed path that you, I mean, it's hard to get on that path, but you've done it and you've succeeded, obviously.
Right, but succeeded, it sounds, you know, when you say succeeded, and to a degree, I agree that I've succeeded at certain things, but it doesn't feel like a success. So the angsty thing, I think, might be that might be hidden pretty well. But I think I'm a pretty serious angst guy.
Right. Well, this is the listeners. They're like looking at your website now, and they're like, "Fuck, well, this guy has no problems. Look at this. He's been married
Been married for 4.5-ish years, but we've been together almost as long as you guys. We've been together for 16.
See, that's what I'm saying. And you're 35. Mm-hmm. I'm 61, honey.
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to hear about my 30s. That was ugly.
I think we do at some point. Yeah, tease that episode. Yeah.
There's some sex in it more probably than now, so
sure.
It'd be interesting. No, but so you know, you're like you're good marriage. You know, you seem like good marriage material. You know what I mean? Like a stable, nice guy. So anyway, I don't always insist on this, but mm-hmm. I kind of insisted this time that Kevin do therapy with me because I want to find out what the fuck is going on.
Sure.
Going on. I'm really threatened by how well adjusted you are.
I think, well, you won't be threatened for too long, I think. But yeah, I feel like I've had comedian friends describe me as when a comedian named Dan St. Germain, who's super funny.
Oh yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he said whenever I show up, he feels like his older brother's coming to get him out of trouble, kind of. But he's also seen me very drunk on multiple continents.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. Well, you're definitely not an uptight guy at all.
Sure.
So I'm sure you have your moments, but that's what I'm trying to get there right as fast as I can.
Go for it.
So as I said earlier to you, like, so let's think of an issue that we could discuss, something that you would, if you were really in therapy mm-hmm. today, like what do you think is on your mind? What are you kind of stressed out about, or what comes to mind that we could discuss?
I mean, it might be a bland thing too, but just the idea of the failure thing in general, like being a failure, like as you say, it looks like it's been successful to this point. And as we were talking about before air, yeah, there have been successful things along the way. But one thing about being a comedian or performer or artist, as you know, is that, you know, yesterday going well is no guarantee of tomorrow going well. You
right.
know, there's no sort of salary structure that guarantees you're going to be a livable adult human being by doing this just because you've had success before. And I feel like I'm in some sort of like in a bit of a lull right now in general where I have less, I mean, besides stand up and, you know, album coming out, hopefully that'll be good.
Yeah, and a monthly show at Union Hall.
Which is great and fun, does not pay rent.
A weekly radio show and a TV. What about all these do you have TV shows going on now?
I'm on air a lot right now, but none of those are taping right now. So I'm not getting paid for them right now. But you could probably turn on True TV and I'm talking right now, I would assume.
Oh, I see.
So like the show True TV World's Dumbest, I did 200 episodes, was on it for 7 years, and they still rerun the shit out of it. Mm-hmm. But there's no residuals coming off that.
Oh,
you know
I
what
see.
I mean? So just in terms of being a person who can, I think the first level of making it for me was like, okay, I don't have to do something else. That's an exhale. I can at least technically survive doing this. And I did for a long time. And
you are now.
I am at this very moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also not too far away from not doing that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it's a 30s thing in general where mm-hmm. it's the sort of, is this it kind of thing mm-hmm. where you don't know, like, okay, do you just get to be the cool grandpa who's like, hey, check this out. I had a YouTube video. This is me talking to a guy. He was a big TV host. TV used to exist. I know it's just Snapchat now, but that used to be a thing, you know? So it's, it's sort of like, I there were a couple of peaks and that's great. But I feel like right now I'm in a bit of a lull waiting for like, all right, what's the next thing? And,
right.
you know,
which is normal for every freelancer, really.
Sure, totally.
Just freelancer. But I know it's also really common. I mean, the most successful people are always when things are in a lull or it's difficult.
Sure. And I think with what I do specifically is a thing where, especially that I'm a comedian that doesn't play a character. I play myself. You know, and I say true things that have happened. When you're not succeeding there, it is because you particularly are not being successful. You know, it's not like I'm not doing, you know, if I was, a lot of jobs.
Yeah,
if I was
you're not hired. Yeah, you get hired to be like the straight man for this kind of movie set.
Sure.
Or something like that. That's a character.
Yeah. But it's like if I'm not succeeding, it's like, oh, the thing we don't like about this is the Kevin part, you know? So,
also, I mean, let's be honest, if you want stability in life, I think out of all the creative pursuits, I think comedy's probably lowest.
It can't be one of the highest.
If you're an artist, you usually have a physical product.
Yeah, that's true. You can show someone, right? Yeah, totally.
That you could maybe sell for something.
Right. Yes.
Or trade for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Get a little barter situation going on. It's hard to barter just talking. Yeah.
Comedy is not. And do you have kids?
I do not.
Okay, so that's something.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine?
It is hard to, right? It's hard to, like, especially where I am right now. And that's probably, like, my mom was a real wizard about raising three kids on no money.
Uh-huh.
But I saw how she did that, and I was like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I don't
want to. Do you not want to have kids?
No, it's not that. It's just, like, I think in an ideal world, I would love to. But
really?
I don't know if that's what this is, you know? So mm-hmm. I feel like I would need something to pop.
So you really want to have financial stability before you have children, and
right.
you're okay with that?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that really frustrating?
I mean, it's frustrating just in that, like, I would like to have the amount of money where I'm like, oh, I believe I can survive indefinitely.
Right.
That
you'd
would
have
be...
a you'd like to have a little more security.
And I'd feel like I'd be able to make more choices then. I feel like I'm not, you know.
Right. Yeah. So I wonder if even just starting this conversation and bringing up the concept of we're talking about your career, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if not being successful as a concept is sort of a bit of a... stress for you because of the way you were brought up, in that were you brought up as sort of like the gold standard in your family of the boys or anything like that? Or
I mean, not, I don't think, I mean, my mom certainly believes that I'm a gold standard, but so are, I think so are all three of us, you know, mm-hmm. she just has
you're not
all the belief.
Favorite.
Well, it's funny, my brothers and I we said at one point, and it was joking, but obviously it came from some truth, where I said, I fully believe my mom does not have a favorite, but if she did, it would be me.
Okay.
And my brothers were like, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And they both also were like, no, she doesn't. But if she did, it would probably be you. And I mean, that makes sense. I've been around the longest, so, you know.
And you probably... Yeah, well, whatever.
I had a head start.
You helped. You know, something you said has really stuck with me in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
before we were on air, was that you helped, your mom wanted, when you were 8 or something, your mom wanted you to, like, approve the apartments. What was that?
She would, like, I feel like she gave me, and I enjoyed this, she gave me a lot of say early on, and it wasn't like I did the shopping for where we're going to live or anything. But when she found a new place to live, and my mom took us, she moved us after the divorce to a very, very good school system, a very wealthy area, but we were the poorest people in this very wealthy area.
Yeah.
You know, so we had to move every 2 years or so because they would tear down the house and then build a mansion on where that place was, right? So we'd move a lot, and she would always take me to the place, take all the kids, but basically be like, what do you think? You know,
mm-hmm.
which is cool, was cool for me, but probably, I guess, not every kid gets to vote on where you live at that age, maybe.
Well, there's a good side to it, and there's also a lot of responsibility
for
a small child, I mean, mm-hmm. which you were, and also, you know, if things aren't going well, like if you move in and then, like, the toilet breaks, I wonder if a kid in your situation might feel some of the responsibility. Oh, I picked the wrong place.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like I could see that. I don't think I felt like that. I think mm-hmm. I think one thing, because obviously when you're kind of poor-ish, you know, living in these places, I think one thing that was probably good was I saw that sort of no matter how weird the place was or small or whatever, like, it kind of doesn't matter. You know, and mm-hmm. And I think that was something my mom sweated a lot more, you know, sweated that the place wasn't, you know, if it wasn't mm-hmm. super neat all the time, if everything mm-hmm. wasn't put away, if it was, you know, our place is smaller than everybody else's, whatever. I think she, or if something's broken, I think she sweat that. But the kids, I think the three of us never did at all, you mm-hmm. know.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good. And what about your relationship with your dad?
He lives in New York. He always has. We lived on Long Island pre-divorce, mm-hmm. and then he's lived in Manhattan since then, and we're cool. Like, we don't. I mean, we don't.
I mean, was he a good dad? Was he around? Was he involved?
I mean, technically, he wasn't around really post 8 because we lived at, you know, we lived in Illinois and he was here.
Oh, I see.
You know, I'd visit, he'd visit, maybe like once a year or so to Illinois, and I'd come out here for Thanksgiving and spring break usually, and sometimes mm-hmm. another. So I'd see him like, I don't know, between, depending on the year, probably mm-hmm. like between 3 and a dozen times a year.
So he know? Was like, he was like a regular, I mean, it was, he was there.
Yeah, I mean,
he was as there as any divorced dad living in a
living halfway across the country. Yeah, so I mean, it's like we're cool, but yeah, I mean, it's just like
he wasn't around.
Yeah, he wasn't there. I mean, from the time I was, you know, I was the man of my house for longer than he was. You know,
right.
So, yeah, I, you know, we're good. And since I moved here, it was nice that it worked out that way. When I first came out here, we lived in the same building as him. And you know, I'll go over and watch Notre Dame games with him and stuff.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
Yeah.
And did your mom date, have a boyfriend, remarry, any of that stuff?
She dated almost none at all until I was almost out of high school, which is probably not something that I think people would recommend to her. But for me, that's great because I hated it. Like, I hated
her dating.
You didn't
like when your mom was dating?
No.
Why?
Because I don't think that's how any kid is built to be like, I can't wait to meet mom's boyfriend. You know, I don't think that is a thing. And by the way, I like love the divorce. I'm psyched that they got divorced. Yeah. That is the, like, my life was a lot better immediately that's afterwards. Good. The Chicago area
didn't get along well.
They just, I mean, it was nothing, you know, super dramatic or messy, right. But it just, they weren't supposed to be together.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So I have a very high opinion of divorce now. You know, I'm a big
fan. No, I mean, yeah. Yeah. No, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
That there's, it makes sense in a lot of cases.
Right. Totally. And I tell my mom that, you know, I think my mom thinks that she feels like there was something more broken and mm-hmm. lost there. And I truly don't. I'm like, no, the best was really post-divorce when we went to Illinois and then everyone was doing what they're supposed to be doing, you know?
Right.
Because I think some people just aren't built for like day-to-day parenting. And I think maybe my dad wasn't like that. But I think my dad basically has the profile of like a good grandpa, you know?
Right. Like, oh, that's good.
You know, yeah. And like a good uncle, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but the day-to-day thing is like, it is a lot. It is heavy. So, yeah.
So let's talk about what's going on as far as you were saying that you have anxiety about your career or something like mm-hmm. that. So like, what's that feel like? Like, what are you thinking about lately? What's been going around in your head? What's been cycling around?
I mean, just, I feel like something has to happen soon, kind of.
So is that like a feeling of impatience or a feeling of
impatience,
failure?
Yeah, yeah, both those things. I think failure for sure is always there. And then impatience, and then also like, have I been too patient to this point? Because I think it's probably a standard middle 30s thing. I'm 35, mm-hmm. so for all your 20s and you know, whatever, everywhere, every age up until now, right, we're the oldest we've ever been, there's more future to it, so
right.
And in the future things can happen, and if you're optimistic and you believe in yourself, which are things I think to a pretty good degree I am and was, in the future things will happen. So the shrinking of that future when things can happen is mm-hmm. a bummer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I did have some things happen, right? Like I had some good breaks, and I am good. And I remember looking up just because I was curious when I did Letterman, I was like, oh, I did Letterman the exact same day of the year that Letterman did Carson in our 31st year.
Oh, wow.
I was 2 months younger at the time, except Dave's career took off a lot quicker after that.
He got a good break.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he's also very, very good. Yes. So I think like up to 30, like right at 31, I feel like, all right, boom, here we are. Now things are starting to happen. And some things have happened since then, but I feel like I'm waiting on the sort of the thing, mm-hmm. you know?
And what do you think that the thing would be?
I guess, you know, I don't know
like
exactly.
Like a regular, like a TV show gig, like a writing gig.
A TV show that's mine. Yeah.
That's yours? Your own TV show?
Yes. That would be the thing. I mean, because I've been on a bunch of other people's shows.
Yeah.
Right?
So being on a TV show is, the novelty's worn off.
Well, it's like, I'll do it and I love doing it. And it's
right.
great. And those, yeah. and those jobs are oddly easy, especially when you just show up and perform. Those are pretty easy because you just do it and
right.
you leave.
So you're, yeah.
I think I would like to do, you know,
write your own show.
Yeah, I would like to have my own thing.
Write and perform, but
yeah.
But the writing, the ideas is the crux of it for you.
I think for me it's just hard to separate the two, you know?
Yeah,
because just because I do write what I do.
Right, right.
So and you know, what interests me about this job in general is being able to say the things you want to say about whatever you want to say it about. And, yeah.
So where are you in that? I mean,
ooh, not honestly, far enough, huh?
Honestly, like hearing that, it's like, and I think that I can see that as a realistic goal for you, but I'm just like, it's to me and you know, the people, my listeners, most of them who are like, you know, like I like to say, unemployed in the basement. No, but who knows? Who knows who's listening?
Sure, I'm unemployed on the second floor a lot.
I tagged this on your Twitter page, so there could be some really successful people listening today.
Of course, yeah.
But anyway, I think to most people, the idea of talking about having your own TV show that you write and are in seems like a crazy dream.
Oh, of course.
And laughable.
Of course, but what else am I doing that doesn't kind of, you know? No. Does being on Letterman sound like a normal thing to do? I mean, I killed on Letterman. So that, like, a lot of this isn't normal. Also, I mean, there's so many TV shows.
I'm just trying to give you a little perspective, which you already know probably anyway. On
oh, and like, I know the stats
like you're
on
already,
it.
And well, but I mean, you're already far. You're already successful enough that we're having this conversation.
Yeah, and I guess
on the radio,
it's a real champagne problem,
no, but,
right? Yeah,
no, but it's not. It's not because that's it's just not because this is the life you know,
right?
And you know, you've sacrificed security for a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of things you could be doing where you wouldn't be being. You've
totally.
You're taking a lot of risk to be in this position. So what I'm wondering about is if you always feel this way, or when the last time you felt this way.
This way, in like in terms of impatience, and like it's not happening.
And there's two things that you pointed out. One is impatience, and the other's failure.
I mean, failure is always that's coming and going pretty consistently forever, I think.
You never not feel like a failure?
No, I there are times when I don't, but it's never that far away.
So you always, I mean, you've had regular successes. So I'll say after you have a success, you feel like a success.
Yeah.
But then eventually that wears off and you wind up feeling like a failure again?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's sort of, and I don't even mean that to sound as heavy or dramatic as it probably does, but when I was saying before, I think one thing about me as a comedian is that I do know when I've killed, and I also know when I've bombed. And there are a lot of comedians, like I was saying, that either think they've never bombed, or if they have bombed, they think it wasn't their fault, you know. And I think I have a pretty reasonable view on when I do well and when I don't. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it is just that, because there are times when I have been successful and done well, and I think I've been like, okay, yes, that was good, I got it. And then there are times where I'm like, oh boy, I blew that. And I'm also like pretty super aware of that, you know. And it can be about dumb stuff too, like this week I thought I bombed a commercial audition, which is like, Jesus Christ, like, who cares, right? I didn't get into this to do commercials, but it would be a nice way to make some money, you know? And it's, you know, fun. You do a 2-minute sketch with someone, that's fine, you know?
Yeah, right.
But getting down on myself about, like, bombing a commercial audition, which I did and I do, is like, I also know in one part of my head, like, that's crazy. Like, this is not... You did not want, you're not on this earth to do commercials.
It doesn't matter.
Right?
It doesn't matter. Right.
Yeah. Like a lot of this stuff doesn't, but it also is the only thing we're doing right now. So, you know,
no one wants to not feel like they did their best on
exactly,
anything.
Exactly. Totally.
Right?
And especially when it's like, when I know it is my fault that I didn't do well in a thing, because it's not always, sometimes things are out of your control, but there are like, that's the thing is like, no matter what it is, it's like, all right, I should have done better at that. Oof, that's a tough feeling to share.
Creative people out there, this is a really important point that Kevin is making that I want to emphasize for you, which is that Kevin evaluates himself in an honest, he has the capability of being honest with himself. His ego is in check enough that Kevin knows when he's doing well and knows when he isn't. And I think that if you want to really develop as a creative person, that's key. Thank you for that.
Oh, sure. No, that's good. I can't. I'm always, I was very excited to hear what happened.
Let's do a station ID because I got to get these people. I think that we're up to a good 250 here on the donation.
Hell yeah. We're right on pace. That's on perfect pace for the five at the end.
Didn't you learn something so far? Isn't this really? But anyway, I just want to say thank you for listening. This is Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn, and I'm talking to a very successful comedian and by any stretch or judgment or matrix, Kevin McCaffrey, and we're doing a therapy session, so let's get back to that. Okay, so here's what I'm thinking, Kevin.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that I'm wondering if there's a connection between the role you played in your childhood growing up and your feeling of success and failure. If there's a connection, like I'm wondering if there was you being the oldest, that maybe you were held, that you felt that you had to set an example or you had a sense of responsibility or something, and that like, you were looked at, maybe you were idealized a little bit as more of a success. I'm not you're a great example of a human being and a creative person.
So, thank you. Jeez, let's put that on the bio.
No,
I'm going to add a fifth paragraph.
I'm not taking anything away from that. You start out at that. I said you were well adjusted right away.
Thank you.
So you in a certain way had a very esteemed, I'm going to use the word esteemed, role growing up as the oldest of three boys and the person that had a say over, who had enough intelligence and sensibility to know whether the apartment was right and probably a bunch of other things. And I'm wondering if the way children look at their parents, that they need to see them as sort of flawless. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you have any of that, or if there's a connection there. I'm trying to make that connection.
Yeah, no, I think there probably is, because I'm sure I do think of my mom as a pretty like ideal, you know, version of what a person's supposed to be, and definitely what a mom's like in my head, like what a perfect mom is that 100%. I think that, and I do think if anything, this between my home role and then like adult role is I'm also in college. I basically immediately took over a TV show, and that's where I met my wife, and that's where I met my best friends. And then we all moved out here and we all work in TV and comedy together. And I think I do take a lot of responsibility for the group closest to me. And that was definitely a home thing for sure. And like wanting my brothers to do as well as they could and for my mom to be okay. And I do think like if I'm not doing as well as I could here, I feel like not only is that bad on me, right? But like that doesn't help my wife. That doesn't help the people closest to me who I want to all succeed together, kind of. Mm-hmm. So I think that probably I'm sure there is a parallel there, because I feel like if I don't make it, kind of a lot of people don't make it. Mm-hmm. And that's not super cool, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So you have like an extra dose of responsibility, which helps you, but it also, I'm wondering what the reality is of the group of people that you're involved in. I mean, mm-hmm. are you, you know, you said you took over the TV show right away. So let's say your fantasy goal is to have a TV show with all the same group.
Totally.
Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, of course. Yeah. If I'm writing a script in my life, that's exactly it.
So are all those people, are you more motivated than those people who are all listening, by the way? Well,
I'm sure they aren't, because there's
all
this
before. There's a call-in number. We don't use this a lot, but if you do have an opinion, call in 718-928-9732.
I think in some ways I probably am more motivated than most of them, but not... but not necessarily, and it could be like just different kinds of motivation too. I would say my wife is like me in that neither one of us have a plan B, you know, like, that's how I want it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But she's
a comedian as well.
Yeah. She's a comedy writer and producer and actress. And she doesn't do stand up, but she's in
the business.
Yeah. So, which is great. And that is a way where I'm super lucky, because I feel like I could not probably be with anyone long term. Unless it was either someone who just thought I was brilliant and trusted everything I was doing, or someone who totally got it from the very beginning, did the same thing and was super talented. Mm-hmm. And Jamie is that. And
she gets it.
You know? And so I don't have to do the thing that I think a lot of comedians and performers and artists generally do when they meet someone, where they have to sort of make them understand the weird elements of this life. And I do have to go do this free show. Like the three free shows in Brooklyn tonight. Yes, that is getting towards something. It really is, but it's hard, you know.
Yeah, she gets it
totally.
That's great.
Yeah, but yeah, I think
So you feel like a certain extra. Do you think you have an extra amount of? Do you think your friends feel the same way? I mean, do you think that you have an exaggerated amount of feeling like you're failing or?
Probably. I don't think my friends would blame me.
No,
you know what I mean?
Not.
They're good people, but it's sort of like, I also don't know how it would be possible for them to talk me into not feeling like that.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
No one's job to talk anybody.
Well,
yeah,
oh, totally. I'm not
that.
Asking them
we
to.
Know, we but know I'm, that. But we know, say, I mean, we yeah. know that, but yeah, no, I know. But
I'm just
I
saying I can't
also,
be convinced, I think.
I
you know?
Wonder also if I was your friend, I'd be like, Kevin's got this. I'm just going to like, you know, I'll do a couple shows here and there, hang out, but Kevin's going to make it. He's going to get the TV show and I'm going along for the ride. Do you think your friends think that?
I mean,
that's their own problem.
Sure, totally. But there might be some of that in, yeah, I mean... I should be working harder, but yeah, I think like if those friends want to make it, to the level that I think we wanted to, then yeah, I think they, you know, that they're, they maybe can or could have done more, you know?
Sure.
But also it's like, it's not on that, you know, everyone's got to live their own life. So it's like, no, they don't exist just to make my wishes come true either.
No,
right.
No,
you know?
No, but I mean, so. I wonder if it makes it, I'm wondering if there's, you know, I mean, and I don't even say this isn't a healthy thing or a helpful thing, but I wonder if there's some dynamic that you might naturally have with people you're close to, where you're sort of have the drive to make things happen and include others so they can rely on you. Whereas, like maybe did you feel like that with your brothers? Did you? What was your relationship with them like?
I think I do have that in general. B, I would say my brother Joe and I were very older brother, younger brother, a pretty pure older brother, younger brother dynamic. We're very close now. We're pretty much, you know, we butted heads a ton as kids, but basically the day I went to college, we were very good friends, you know, like And we were still like, I still would coach his baseball teams and stuff as a kid. My youngest brother, Patrick, who's an ER doctor now, which is crazy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And, he's 7 years younger than me, but he also looks crazy young. So that's a very weird thing to see in your, coming to you in the ER. But, I was like, we're good friends. And, but I do think our relationship is a very like hybrid dad brother thing, you know? Cause I was a full on like assistant coach for his baseball team, his like baseball teams when I was a teen. Mm-hmm. I was like the youngest assistant coach in the league by like 15 years, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think
Were you worried about them? Do you think that maybe some of the anxiety you had about the divorce, you kind of turned into like a positive motivational thing by taking care of them or something like that instead of feeling bad, worrying about yourself, worrying about them?
Yeah, I mean, I guess with them I do care a lot that they like just are okay, you
so
know,
good.
Like, you know, and awesome. Yeah, but, and I'm sure I didn't do that the best in always the best ways as a kid too. But, yeah, like, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm invested in them doing well. Very
right,
much so.
Right.
Yeah.
And so maybe some of that transferred over to your friends.
Totally. Yeah. I think so. And honestly, with my friends, it might even be, specifically with like my college friend group, it's almost like almost more response, at least in modern times now, feeling like more responsibility now.
So that's,
my brothers are good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's a doctor.
Yeah. They're fine. Yeah.
So I'm not saying, like I said, I'm not trying to say it's negative at all, because mm-hmm. There's nothing about it that necessarily is. But one of the things that I have to ask as a pretend therapist is if any of this is getting in your way and holding you back. Like, for example, I wonder if the responsibility or energy that you put in focusing on the other people, like,
sure.
I wonder if some of that, if you were much more selfish or self involved.
Yeah, I've wondered that, and I've wondered if it also, you know, in a not irony, but in an, I guess in an incorrect usage of irony that everyone uses, is ironically, maybe had I been more selfish earlier, that would have been more helpful to everybody. You know, if I could have, and again, like, I don't really like know what I passed up on specifically, but if I was more like solely me focused earlier, maybe I would be farther ahead and would be able to pull more strings and stuff. And again, it's like part of it is this, it's just a dumb industry. So yeah. It's like, these are talented, you know, I have a very talented group of friends who all should be getting stuff, but,
Well, I think it also helps your confidence and your vision as a performer to have them sort of in the proverbial room.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
It's kind of, but I'm wondering if, okay, so I'm just wondering, like, what would it be like? Like, let's, like, I just want to think about what it would be like if you, are you still, like, it seems like they're in your head when you're thinking about your career.
Yeah, I mean, not on a minute-to-minute basis or anything.
No,
but
I mean, they're like ingrained in your thinking about your career.
Yeah, very much so.
So I'm wondering if
big picture,
the big picture. So I'm wondering, just for the hell of it, if we could freshen that vision up by thinking about what would be different if you weren't thinking about them, or if it would even be possible if you were. I'm wondering if you're limiting yourself creatively by having a set group in mind.
Right. And I think, like, I almost think it would be more comforting if I thought I was, you know, because it would be almost a way, it would be a reason for why I don't have more or something. It could be something I say, like, oh, maybe if I wasn't doing that. But I don't really think so. If anything, I think earlier on, I could have made a better effort to expand my group more and meet, you know, meet more people and meet more people who are into the same stuff. Because we really did basically move here together and live together and all that stuff.
Yeah, it must have been awesome.
It was great. It was,
still, I mean, that's great. It's enviable in a lot
of
ways.
Totally. I loved it. Yeah. And, I don't regret that. I do regret, it's sort of like when the kid who goes to college and rooms with their best friend from high school, you know, that kid doesn't really get the full college experience, right? Because there's no, like, they're not compelled to meet everyone they're supposed to and be as open as they could. So I do think in college, it went so great for me, partially because I went there and I was the only one from my high school was at this college. So I completely open. And then I moved, when I came to New York, it was the opposite of that. I came out here and was with everybody already, which was great. And that was a gift. But also, I was like less open to meeting and working with people earlier, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think I'm pretty open, but to working with everybody. But at the time, I sort of was like, well, I've got this. So I don't, you know, I feel like I didn't get out as much.
Did you have a fan a fantasy like we all do, or a vision at that age that something was going to happen with that group and that was your focus?
Oh, sure. And it's in which is crazy in a general sense, because it's, I mean, it's a crazy idea on its own, but also it's not crazy because that does happen in this industry. Like, it, you know, that does have, like, the College Humor kids and the, you know, the, there's been a bunch of different, you know, sketch groups and stuff that was just like a sketch group out of college, and then they just got stuff, you know. And so it's something that has happened.
And I think you guys probably did make a lot happen.
Yeah, we did stuff, and did stuff I'm proud of, and, you know, stuff we did that at the time I didn't even think was that good. And now if we, you know, we try to get together every Christmas and watch our old college Christmas episodes, and then other stuff we did after that once we moved here. And like the times we've done that in the past couple of years, I'm like, Jesus, this is actually good, you know. And it's a surprise now when I'm like, oh man, this should be something, you know. When at the time we're you know you're so caught up in it and you're mm-hmm. like, oh, nothing's happening and it shouldn't probably. And then now mm-hmm. I'm like, no, I work out, I do this professionally. Some of this could be something, you know. Yeah.
So what about, like, creatively, like the projects that you're working on now, what, like, how are you, I mean, I imagine you spend a lot of time writing. I mean, I know you perform all the mm-hmm. time, right?
Right. That's the most consistent thing I do is stand up. So I'm doing mm-hmm. stand up in the city most.
And you have an agent manager and all that stuff.
I have a agent for colleges specifically for doing mm-hmm. college shows. And then I have like a commercial agent, but I don't have an agent or manager besides that.
Right. So you get booked on, so you have somebody booking you on college shows?
In theory, yes. Yeah. A few a year. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you doing most of the booking?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In terms of clubs,
that's really common. Reach out.
Yeah. I think so. With stand-ups, it's like stand-ups is such a, it's so weird. It's
just
like
you. It's just you. You don't need like a whole like band or something.
No, and it's so nuts because I mean I took two commercial classes and I immediately had a very cool commercial agent that sent me out for stuff immediately. I've been doing stand-up for 10 years. I've been on Letterman. I've done, you know, I've made mm-hmm. a kind of a lot of money for a stand-up through this and TV, and I don't have a stand-up agent manager. Is like crazy. It's just how stupid stand-up
is. I don't
is.
Understand this.
No, me neither. It is, you know, garbage.
So I'm just trying to figure out if you're expressing some regret of the past.
And oh, we all for have, sure. Totally.
And we all have regrets. And that's,
hell yeah, Dr. Lisa. I am crazy. I'm way too nostalgic in general. And like, and just full of regrets.
Really?
And yeah, I'm regret machine. Regret. I regret lunch before I'm done ordering it.
Oh,
yeah.
So that could be holding you back.
Sure. I 100% believe that. Yeah.
So let's think about, like, okay, so one of the things that is really powerful in your life is the dream of becoming a comedian, moving to New York, and having you and your friends who probably were you guys stars in college?
I mean, I guess in a sense. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
it seemed like you guys were a big deal in college, I bet.
Oh, sure. As far as
you were like, this is going to happen. And you imagine it was going to, you had the dream and you were young and the dream didn't happen as big right away as everybody had hoped.
Right. For me, I felt like a first round draft pick where they had like a really good rookie year and then got injured or something. And who knows what happened since.
Well, in the art world, they just tell you to look at all the Whitney Biennial catalogs and see if you recognize any of those names.
So, oh, totally. Yeah, right. Exactly. You show up big and
yeah. So there we go.
Yeah.
But is that something that, like, is that something that you haven't quite processed, I wonder? Or is that when you say nostalgia, is that what you're talking about? Or is that more of a childhood thing? Or what do you really mean by nostalgia?
I think nostalgia, I'm nostalgic in the sense that I've been very lucky and I've had a lot of very good breaks and I've had a lot of very good times. And so I'm nostalgic about a lot of good things that have happened, which is great. Except I feel like it probably compounds the bummed out about not making it better so far, because I feel like I've had so many lucky breaks. So what's there to blame, really? You know, it's sort of like, mm-hmm. if I am who I think I am, something should happen soon. If it or something should have happened already, or more.
Did you feel like that when you were a lot younger too?
Probably. I think so. Yeah, I think
So I'm saying this is a negative feeling that comes from something perhaps bigger than actual circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, that's possible. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, but it's. I don't think it's helping you,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you're looking back fondly in a way that's colored, based on what you've already achieved, and maybe not imagining what you could achieve in the future.
Right. Yeah, whereas that's the helpful thing to do, is to be doing the future stuff, be doing the present stuff.
Yeah, well, we're not talking about helpful. This is just therapy.
Sure, sure.
So I'm trying.
That's a great tagline. We're
not trying to be helpful. So you're right. Yeah. I'll be therapy with me.
I'm into it.
A real shrink, sort of. Not really. So what I'm thinking about is that you might... You know, that's not helping you. So
the nostalgic thing.
The nostalgic thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. Totally.
So how can we identify where that's coming from, and let's try and move past that a little bit. Work on that. Let's work on that.
Sure.
I think you need to reframe. Let's see if we can reframe that so you can take some. Thing to work on after you leave.
Sure. I'll give it a
shot. In the next 8 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm imagining that you're looking back with rose-colored glasses.
I think so, but I would feel better if I thought those glasses were more rosy. Like, I feel like I don't know, because I think a lot of what I look back on isn't so much actual success or whatever. I think a lot of it is the back in the day when there was more future, right? So I think that's something I miss, is like the diminishing of possibilities, which just comes with time, you know. And I miss like being more hopeful, I guess, you know.
Yeah, I'm also wondering if you're missing that feeling of youth.
Oh, for sure. Totally.
You know, you're talking to me here. I said 61, right?
Yeah, sure.
So
Hell yeah, for sure.
No, but I mean like where any kind of achievement was a good achievement. The bar, like there was a lot more hope. I mean,
totally. That's a lot of it, I think.
I'm like thinking that you're feeling old at 35.
Yeah, very much so.
And
yeah.
I can understand that in comedy and stuff like that. But I understand that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily think there's reality. It's real.
Right.
It's based on truth.
Yeah, it's not life done time. You know, it's just, it feels like it's getting late early. In specifically what I do job wise, I guess, but which probably makes me feel like it's that way beyond job stuff too, when it's not, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there are like comedians who make it very young.
Oh, sure.
And then there's comedians who have a long, solid career and have highlights much later.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah. Very true. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's harder if you're a rock musician.
Yeah,
because once you're like 35 as a rock or 40 as a rock musician, like they're really based on like looks and shit, like bullshit.
Sure. However, if you're a rock musician and you knocked out that one great album, you can tour on that forever. With comedy, if I do that one great album, people come out and see me, and if they hear one joke from the first album, they're like, I already heard that.
Well, you picked a really hard field.
It's and a real, you, real that, dumbass choice on I, my part. Yeah.
That sucks. I think that sucks. Yeah. You've seen like nostalgia acts.
That's oh, sure.
Not fun.
Yeah.
You're not having a great time.
No. Yeah. Totally. And it's, oh, yeah. God. Talk about nostalgia. Yeah. A lot of mm-hmm. those guys where it's like, you know, all that green room is. It's like, oh, back in the day, we were something. You know?
Yeah. But you have a lot going on now, and you're But I guess, you know what else is really weird? I'm just going to say this. We have five minutes. We're not going to be able to really solve this. But
tell me
I
about
think
it.
That, of course, you can come back for another session when your album comes out.
Oh,
we'll have
sure.
something
yeah.
in the moment. We got it. Because you need to really focus on being in the moment.
I do. Yes, I agree.
In the
that.
Moment and moving forward. And it's almost a cognitive, I'm going to give you a cognitive behavioral therapy thing to
sure.
just kind of try to put out the past, just try to like change the channel in your head. It's just discipline, I think. It's something you're used to, and mm-hmm. it's not. But I also think that like you're married to a woman that you've known since you were.
We've been together since we were 20.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and I knew her.
And,
basically
and you have a lot of friends. So, in truth, a lot of your life is the past is present.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, which so I think is such a great gift in a lot of ways. You know,
there's a lot of great stuff to that. I also wonder if there's that it might be good for you to develop some other. Do you have other things or develop like maybe you need like here's an idea like a new interest. Like maybe if you decided you wanted to, I don't know, take a write short stories and you got involved in like a short story group, you'd have a whole new group of friends and creative things. Have you done things like that?
I just started writing for a baseball website. I'm a real baseball nut, so I wrote had my first baseball piece published, so that's probably the closest thing to like mm-hmm. Because it's not comedy, you know, it's like a side, you know.
But is it a group of people?
No, not thus far. Yeah.
And they're going to be baseball nerds. That's not going to help you. Those are people.
Different version of the same thing. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
A less socially developed.
Yeah. Yeah. But I actually would say baseball people are less socially developed than even comedians, which is, geez, that is a tough burn. But yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, because I just know, like, I'm just tell you my own experience like as a creative person, like having a job in advertising as an art director and then making art on the side. Those things sort of balance each other, or like one world to having two worlds, like doing performing and doing visual art like I have now. That's two worlds,
right?
So there's always like they feed each other, and then there's growth, and then there's different kinds of personalities. And I'm a very, you know, I get down on myself a lot and competitive about my creative work and all this shit.
Of course.
But then I am also able to evaluate myself along different, with different groups. So
right. It's a lot to ask of one world.
Not be feeding you everything.
Yeah.
You may not, because you're so directed, you may not be as balanced as you could be.
Yes, I agree with that. I think that's a good call.
So I like the idea that you're writing about sports. Mm-hmm. Now, there's an area that you could probably develop a new creative group in.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got a minute and a half.
Uh-huh.
I just want to remind people again that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I'm here with comedian Kevin McCaffrey. And I think this was worth $5.
I think so. Yeah.
Totally.
I've done shows that you had to pay more for that were much worse. So yeah. 100%.
So go to that radiofreebrooklyn.com donate page and let's talk again. Kevin, tell us again what's going on in your website.
The website is kevin-mccaffrey.com. kevinmccaffrey.com was taken by some guy who reserved it, and it goes straight to a pharmacy in Pennsylvania. So that guy's an asshole. But kevin-mccaffrey.com is my website. That's got all my live dates up on it. If you follow me on Twitter at Kevin McCaff, on Twitter, Instagram, it's all Kevin McCaff. And that will I'll post when my album Nice and Drunk is coming out, which should be shortly.
And you know what else, guys? I also want to like remind you to stay tuned, because do you know who's on after this show? It's Elon Danziger. Do you know him?
No, but that's a hell of a name.
I know. He's a really awesome guy.
Cool.
And he does this really fun show. He has like storytelling and music. The show is called Lost and Rewound. So stay tuned for my good friend, Elon. Thanks again for listening to